I'll call the meeting to order. We have minutes from April 16th and April 24th. Representative Zong, I'm assured that you have taken a look at the April 16th minutes and would like to move them for us.
Mr. Chair, I actually did. So moved, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the April 16th minutes as written, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have minutes for the 16th approved. And Representative Cagle, I'm sure you took a look. I'm sure if you didn't, your daughter there did. Took a look at the April 24th. Would you like to move them?
I'll move the minutes to April 24th.
All those in favor of the April 24th minutes as written, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have minutes for the 24th. Representative Olson, you have the House File 4602, and I think you have a testifier also. So would you like to move your, I'll move you the House File 4602. Would you please explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 4602 was in 2019 in the Omnibus Jobs Bill with the MIF funding that was a part of that. $2 million of it was to go to the Verso paper plant, paper mill in Duluth as a part of their upgrade to the facilities in order to manufacture a higher grade of paper. And the 2019 Jobs Bill stated that 25% of the MIF loan is forgivable each year starting in 2020 if Verso retains at least 200 full-time employees and satisfies the other performance obligations. But given the current state of affairs and where we're at with COVID-19 and other factors that the testifier will speak to, there will be a slight reduction in the number of jobs that would be a part of this project. And so we want this project to go forward. It's really a great project. Verso does good work, has good jobs in Duluth, and it's really important this goes forward. The cost doesn't change, unfortunately, but some of the implications around the jobs does. So that's why this is here, to make a change to that. And so with that, I would turn it over to my testifier.
Mr. John Bastian?
Bastian, yes, good morning.
Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Okay. So thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak today. My name is John Bastian. I am the mill manager of the Verso Duluth Paper Mill. I'm here regarding, as Liz mentioned, our request to change the language for a $2 million Minnesota Investment Fund grant through deed that was approved in the state's budget last year. As mill manager, I have the privilege of leading and representing the many fine people that work at the Duluth Mill. The quality of our workforce results in world-class performance in safety, quality, cost, and operational performance. A great example of this is the mill recently receiving the Governor's Award of Honor for Safety. This is the highest award for safety performance possible and requires that the mill's safety performance be at least 91% better than industry average, and our safety programs achieve a score of between 91 and 100 on a rating scale. So the mill actually has achieved three streaks of over a year without a serious injury in the mill in the last 6 years, which for those of you who understand the manufacturing industry, would understand that's a really remarkable accomplishment for a facility that has over 200 folks. The mill was started up in 1987 and is a world-class producer of super calendar grade products. This type of paper is used for advertising inserts, catalogs, and magazines. So think about the Target ad in your Sunday paper. Think about the Cabela's catalog that you get in the mail. And if you're as old as I am, the ARP magazine that you may get in the mail as well. These are excellent paying jobs for the region with payroll in excess of $25 million per year. The average wage at our facility averages between $60,000 and $70,000 per year. So these are very good paying jobs. And we have a significant economic impact on the Northeast Minnesota economy, contributing more than $100 million every year in annual contributions. This includes $40 million in energy purchases, over $700,000 in property taxes, and $7.3 million in environmental protection programs. Since manufacturing jobs support another 3 to 4 jobs within the community, our facility directly and indirectly supports employment for approximately 800 people in Northeast Minnesota. We are also the City of Duluth's largest customer for electricity, water, and wastewater treatment services. Unfortunately, due to fundamental changes in how people obtain information, and probably even more importantly, how they purchase products, the demand for super calendar grade paper has been declining at a rate of over 5% a year for the last 10 years. These market trends demand that the Duluth Mill diversify its product mix. And to do that, obviously, we would want to manufacture grades or new grades in markets that are stable and growing. So our intention, and we've already started on this, is to begin making packaging products, which is, as I think everybody knows, a growing market. These products are made from recyclable materials, are 100% recyclable themselves, and manufacturing these products reduces our energy consumption by about 40%. We actually have been making packaging products for over a year now. To date, we have manufactured 37 different grades and over 20,000 tons of commercial products. We have yet to have our first paper quality complaint. So we've already demonstrated success in these markets. Unfortunately, current mill equipment capability limits our ability to increase our production of packaging grade products. Consequently, we've developed the strategic capital investment that Liz mentioned for the Duluth Mill that would cost in excess of $25 million and provides the mill with the ability to significantly increase the production of packaging products in addition to continuing to make SC grades. If approved, this strategic investment will ensure that the Verso Duluth Mill is a high-wage employer and an important part of the Northeast Minnesota economy for years to come. So why am I here today? The request in the original language listed the minimum number of employees at 200. We are requesting that the language be changed to reduce this number to 150. There are two reasons for this change. First, with a year of manufacturing experience behind us, we are confident that we can successfully run the mill and make these products with fewer employees. Secondly, we need the lower cost structure that the reduced number of employees provides to consistently generate acceptable financial results during the normal peaks and valleys of the business cycle. Like many businesses, maybe all businesses in Minnesota, COVID-19 has had a huge negative impact on our business. We currently project that it will increase mill financial losses by more than $14 million in 2020. It is dramatically accelerating the decline of our SC business. Also, because of the increased financial losses incurred this year, the return of the Duluth strategic investment opportunity that we are considering has been lowered significantly. Candidly, we need both the $2 million grant and the lower headcount number in the language to convince our leadership that this strategic investment must be made. Sadly, the consequences of not making this investment is likely a mill shutdown. So thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and I'd be more than happy now to entertain any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Beston. Representative Kosnick, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. If I can clarify that there was a $20 million investment made to get the grant in the first place, has that full $20 million been invested?
No. The real story is we have made a small investment of about $5.5 million earlier this year to be able to start producing packaging grades. That's allowed us to achieve our limited production so far. The next investment is well north of $25 million, and it has not been made. It will be taken up for consideration by our SLT and the Verso Board of Directors likely in June.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So I'm curious if we maybe the author or staff could just clarify for me what the original investment amounts were supposed to be. And then just more broadly, if the author just and the committee, I'd like to kind of have on the record, does this set a bad precedent? I understand the unique circumstances we all face today, but I'd like to have that addressed. So if what the original kind of terms were of the agreement, and then to the author, does this set a bad precedent for future grants that we offer?
Representative Olson.
Yes, I'll take the last question first and then can let maybe John talk more about the original or staff. So Representative Kosnick, I appreciate that question. And this, you know, I spent a lot of time talking with John about this project. And I think what you heard loud and clear from him is if we don't do this, I mean, precedent aside, if we don't do this, the implications on our region would be far more devastating than the precedent we set right now. That the moment we're in, this not only means that we would lose some of the best paying jobs in Duluth, but the regional impact it would have on everything from the utilities that the mill produces to, I mean, everything, the blow to our regional economy, if we don't do this, is far greater. So I agree with you that, you know, it's our job as legislators and your job, you know, Representative Kosnick, to ask that exact question. I would not be bringing this bill forward to make this reduction and, you know, it wouldn't be moving in the Senate either if there wasn't a real need and a real case to be made here. So I feel confident in moving this forward because of, you know, what the mill has done and how thoughtful they have been about it. I know more than anything, they would rather not be here having to do this as well, but it's the situation we're in and it's how we're proceeding. And I feel fine about what we're asking for. And because of, again, the implications of not doing this are far more devastating for our region than having a conversation around precedent. And then with that, I think the first part of the question I can direct to John or staff.
Okay, I'll make it. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to call on you. We should all always go through the chair if possible.
Okay.
Mr. Bassett.
So I guess to take you through a little history, when we first teed up the project, we were envisioning that it would be one investment. And when we put the proposal forward, you know, we were still in the process of engineering. So we said, it's going to be one investment. We know it's going to be more than $20 million, and that's how the original language was teed up. Since that time period, Verso has decided to make the investment in two phases, and the total investment amount has gone up significantly. The first was this year to kind of get our feet wet and to prove that we could be commercially successful in the packaging market, which we have done. And then the second investment, which is well in excess of $25 million, to be candid with you, is the one that will really allow us to significantly increase our packaging production, which is what is required to turn mill financial results around, if that answers your question.
Representative Kosnick,
thank you.
That answers your question.
Yep. I appreciate the intent of the bill, Representative Olson.
Okay. All right. Wait a minute, everyone. Mute your phones because there's a lot of background noise. So if you're not speaking, please mute your phone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I was saying,
go ahead, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. Representative Olson, I appreciate your intent on this bill. And I think it should be of the record that for not the COVID, we wouldn't be entertaining this. At least I wouldn't. And I'm a little concerned that the second investment that was under the agreement, the $25 million that the testifier speaks of, I'm not sure that we have what's going to happen in 18 months down the road, and that investment isn't followed through on. So just a concern there. I'm not going to necessarily
oppose. Thank you,
Bill. And then thank you,
Representative Robbins.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson and Mr. Bastian. I just have a couple questions. What is the current FTE count at the plant?
Currently, we have about 230 employees that work at the mill.
Representative okay. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So even under the original proposal, you were anticipating losing headcount?
Mr. Bastian.
That is correct.
Any further comments? Yes, one more. If the Section 179 conformity was in place, would that be advantageous to you in making this significant capital investment?
Mr. Bastian.
Not sure I understand the question.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. So the federal government has changed how you can deduct capital equipment and depreciate it over a shorter time horizon. It's kind of generally referred to as Section 179. Minnesota currently doesn't comply with that, and I wondered if that would change any of the financials for you if we complied with that.
Mr. Bastian.
That is a great question, and that is something, frankly, we would have to explore. I'm probably not ready to answer that question properly.
Maybe you can get back to Representative Robbins with an answer at a later date.
Thank you.
I would be happy to do that.
I noticed or notified that either Baker or Backer has a question.
Mr. Chair, that'd be the important one. That would be Representative Baker.
Okay, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, John and Representative Olson for bringing this forward. I supported the bill initially, and it's a fabulous paper mill in Duluth. I've got friends that have worked there, and I want to support this. However, I think kind of bringing up what Representative Kozik brought up is it is setting a very difficult slippery slope here if we don't do this right. And it sounds like, John, you were anticipating, the last 10 years, you've been seeing your sales slip due to different reasons, not because of COVID, but other reasons. And I understand that. I work with the folks up in International Falls and Blandon, and I understand this is a challenging industry to be in, and I really appreciate all the things that you're doing. We're kind of asking to be changing the rules as this thing moves ahead after the investment promises by you were given. Now, what I heard you say was that you still plan on making your at least $20 million investment into the plant. What if that doesn't happen, John? I guess I want to ask the question right up front. If you get to 15 and you don't have any more and you receive the state $2 million, how do we reconcile that, John? I'm just asking that question up front because we didn't want you here either. We want you guys to be making money and employing people, and that was the original intent of this whole thing. But help us be ready to answer that tough question, because it's happened before to other mining companies. And I just want to know, how do we answer that, John? And I think it's something that nobody wants to get to. But what's your thought on that? Thank you.
Well, first off, he's not a mining company. So, Mr. Bastian.
Okay, thank you for the question and the kind words. I would say with a fair amount of assurance, we are going to spend more than $25 million in a second investment on this project, or we're not going to do the project, if that answers your question. So I don't think we have to worry about exceeding the $20 million threshold. And the project's either going to go forward, we're going to get the grant, or the project's not going to go forward and we won't get the grant money.
And thank you. And I'll add a couple of words and then we'll see if there's any other questions. In comments that I've spoken with Representative Olson, she's indicated that you're kind of as a thank you for this particular bill, that you will make a real effort with the high schools and the workforce centers up there to do some exploring better workforce training opportunities for young people up there. And I appreciate that, because Duluth is such a growing city and resurgent city, I should say. They're going to need more people that are well-trained and stay up there for high-paying jobs. I will take any other question. I will ask, are there any other questions? Are there any other questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion for House File 4602 to be passed to the General Register. All those in favor, the clerk will take the roll.
You are unmuted. All right, everybody. Again, I'll read your name. I'll give you a little bit of time here, and then we'll come back to you if there's no answer. At this time, Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther. Representative Backer.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Gunther. Representative Backer. Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
Aye.
Representative Hassan. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Jean.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Representative.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Noted, Rep.
Yeah, Backer votes aye.
Gotcha. Representative Hassan. Mr. Chair, we have 17 ayes and one absent.
Representative Olson, you're on your way to the floor. Thank you very much, Mr. Bethany.
Thank you, Chairman Mahoney.
Next up is House File 3341. And we're going to be sending that to Ways and Means. John, are you around?
Mr. Chair, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
All right, here we go.
Representative Hood, I will move House File 3341 to be heard and passed to Ways and Means. Could you please explain your bill?
Mr. Chair Mahoney and members, thank you for hearing the bill today. It's a very simple house cleaning bill. House File 3341 will put our appraisal division in compliance with the federal Dodd-Frank regulations for appraisal companies working in Minnesota. Right now, we're not in compliance. This bill was brought to me by the appraisal companies, and they worked hard with the Minnesota Department of Commerce, the Bankers Association, the Minnesota Mortgage Lenders, and individual appraisers. Basically, what it's going to do is allow the Commerce Department to collect the fees needed and to forward the fees and information needed from the appraisal companies and forward that on to the National Registry of Appraisers. I believe there are some testifiers here that could speak more in detail if we need them.
Well, let's see if there are any questions. Does everyone understand the bill?
Wow.
Yes. So, no questions. I will, at this point, renew my motion that House File 3341 is passed and sent to Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Hecklin.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
Aye.
Representative Hassan. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Hassan. Mr. Chair, we have 17 ayes and one absent.
Thank you, Josh. Representative Hewitt, you are on your way to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We have next House File 4603, General Fund Transfer to Repay the 21st Century Mineral Fund. Representative Eklund, could you please present your bill or move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 4603, and I also have a DE amendment for that bill, Mr. Chair.
All right. Would you care to move your amendment?
I will move the House File or H4603DE1, Mr. Chair, to get the bill in the shape that I would like it.
I don't think we have to. Do we have to Mike? Do we have to do a roll call on the DE1 amendment?
We do not, Mr. Chair. As long as there's any nays, then we should. But if it's unanimous, I think we're fine with the voice vote.
All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? You have the bill in the shape that you would like, Representative Eklund. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The Leadall Amendment is before us today to ensure that the money borrowed from the 21st Century Fund due to this COVID-19 related issues has a mechanism to be repaid. This is going to be a long process in getting our state back in the shape it needs to be in. And I just want to make sure that if I am no longer in this position, that the person that follows me will know that we did what we could to make sure that this Economic Development Fund for Northeastern Minnesota would be made whole. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will stand for questions.
Are there any questions? Could you briefly go over how it is repaid?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 1.22 of the delete all, there can't be more than $5 million repaid per year to the fund. And that includes the amounts that may be credited from loan repayments that happened out of this withdrawal. And then it would be up to $5 million each year until the amount reaches $20 million. Originally, Mr. Chair, we were going to have it come from the Unemployment Insurance Fund, but in working with the governor's office, this is the language that we came up with.
This is the language that the governor said he would sign.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to know, Mr. Chair, that the same efforts are being worked on in the Senate, but I don't know the status of where they're at. That's why they're at this time, there's no Senate author.
Are there any questions? Any questions? Seeing none, Representative Kosnick.
Yeah, sorry, I did text.
Yeah, I literally got the message from Josh as you were breaking in there. So go right ahead.
Yeah, I tried to do that instead of just unmuting and jumping in. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund, the funds, I think it might be helpful if we could have a kind of a history of how the 21st Century Fund started to begin with. But my question to the author is, what are the plans for the investments in the fund, and how will they be used? Are there current plans, or are you just protecting dollars that were perceived to be for this fund? My concern is more broadly to the whole state general fund budget as we face the challenges that we do. Certainly, there's going to be a real pinch for every coin that we can find under the state cushions in the couch. And I'm concerned that without having we're just siphoning off $5 million right away without any particular plan, just to protect some territory. But I fear that when we come back, we're going to be looking for funds for other things, for education, public safety, health and human services, of course, transportation. What's the $5 million ongoing, and what are the different investments that this program funds, and what are their plans that they actually need the repayment right away?
Well, Representative Kosnick, the state has a fairly healthy reserve fund and rainy day fund. So I don't think it's as dire as you tried to make it out there, but Representative Eklund, would you care to explain the process which this is repaid in?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And first off, the history, this fund was created, I believe, in 1999 by Senator Doug Johnson, wrote the original language. It was a general fund appropriation, I believe, to provide a fund where DEED would have funds available to promote economic development in Northeast Minnesota. This fund is not going to be repaid immediately. That's why I said it's going to be a long haul repaying back. It's when there is a budget surplus when it's going to be repaid. It's not like my original legislation asked for it to start next year. Well, that wasn't going to happen. I knew that. So, developments that have happened with this 21st Century Fund is a good example is Haleen, the solar manufacturing plant in Virginia or Mountain Iron. And we also have, if some that were here remember the talk about the Louisiana Pacific Project in Cook, Minnesota, that some money is encumbered for that. Now with building starts down, people are, companies are reevaluating the plans or same kind of thing with Representative Olson's bill prior. So there are a lot of projects that are being looked at using this fund, and we just want to make sure that it is repaid to what it was supposed to be when there is a budget surplus again. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Kosnick, did you have a follow-up at all?
Just to clarify, I did misspeak. I know that it's being paid according to the bill in increments. But I appreciate the answer. I didn't hear any specific projects, but thank you very much.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And quick question maybe to Representative Eklund. What's the marker as far as When do we know that it's been fully repaid then? To what is the balance, I guess, before the COVID hit? So we know when that fund will be repaid in full by this bill.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, that there was approximately $33 million in the fund when the $20 million was taken to for the small business loan program.
Thank
so
you.
$33 million would be total, would be approximately.
We're just, and Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, we're just paying back the $20 million, right? That's correct.
That is correct. So it will be paid back when there's $20 million from either the surplus, a future surplus, and or any loan repayments from the emergency loan fund.
Thanks for the time.
Seeing no other questions, do you have any closing comments, Representative Eklund?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you and the members for considering this bill. It's taken some time to put together, and I ask for your support.
Would you care to renew your motion to pass House File 4603 and send it to Ways and Means?
That would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
Will the clerk take the roll?
Representative Mahoney.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
Aye.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
Aye.
Representative Hassan. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Hassan. Mr. Chair, we have 17 ayes and one absent.
Representative Eklund, you're on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you very much. We next have House File 4429, Representative Clafton, a name change and a change in the pay for performance grants program. Representative Claflin, would you care to move your bill to the General Register?
Good morning and thank you, Chair. I would like to move House File 4429 to be placed on the General Register.
And I think you have an amendment to this particular bill?
That is correct. I'd like to move Amendment 1, the A1 amendment. And this will take language that we've already heard in committee from House File 3325. I'll leave the rest of my explanations after you've adopted the amendment.
All right. Would you care to present your bills?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Beginning with the A1 amendment, this simply takes language that we've heard previously on the Displaced Homemaker Program, which has been supported by the committee. It renames the program as the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership. the updated name will hopefully expand the people who are looking for assistance from this partnership and make it a little bit more relevant to job seekers. The program helps people who have been primarily homemakers and are looking to enter the workforce, usually because of tragic circumstances. A spouse who was the primary paycheck is no longer able to work, and the homemaker needs to enter the workforce. So they offer a lot of training throughout the state, and they do very, very good work with the limited funds that the state gives them. They have partnerships throughout the state. And the amendment would just add that policy change, changing their name. It has to be done in statute because of the way that it is referred to in statute, and it's related to a federal program that is also called the Displaced Homemaker Program. And then the original bill, House File 4429, is a policy change for the Pay for Performance Workforce Training Program. And it does a few things. To be in this program only reimburses the organizations once they meet certain standards or thresholds for the work that they have done. So the funds are reimbursed after someone is placed in the workforce. And this bill would change some of the language around the requirements for those programs. Currently, there's only one organization that uses this framework, Twin Cities Rise, and we'll hear from them a bit later. But the changes to the program would change the funding that an organization must spend on a participant from a fund spent per graduate to a fund spent per participant. It's a bit easier to budget that and track the results. And it would also change the threshold for reimbursement based on what the program graduates must be earning in the workplace. Right now it's tied to $9 per hour, and the language would change that to the state's minimum wage, which is a bit above that. So it would let us not come back and revise this every time the state minimum wage changes. It adds some of the skills that must be included in the training program, some of the soft skills, especially digital literacy. And then it also will expand the pool of people who are eligible to participate in this program by expanding the poverty levels, that it will let people enter this program sooner, and it will let more people enter this job training program. And I would also like to introduce Mr. Streets from Twin Cities Rise, who will testify on this program as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Streets, would you identify yourself for the tape and please proceed?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tom Streets, President and CEO of Twin Cities Rise. Pardon my casual appearance. I'm quarantining like a lot of Minnesotans up at the cabin, and I don't have a suit and tie in the closet. So thank you for taking the time to hear from me today. Briefly, I want to start by thanking all of you for your great work. I'm proud to be a Minnesotan during this difficult time. I also want to mention that Twin Cities Rise has been featured on the media extensively the last 3 weeks, NPR, Care 11, MinnPost, for our work helping low-income, low-wage workers attain employment even during the COVID crisis. We're very proud of that. In addition, on April 3rd, we launched something called neweconomylearning.com, which is of yesterday. We had 1,088 job seekers visit that site. So we've quickly pivoted all of our programming to be online, which is really helping a lot of folks. With regard to the specific changes you see in front of you, this is a longtime partnership with the state. We are not requesting any funds be allocated. This is simply technical changes made to the bill, actually very closely crafted with DEED support and DEED staff, including Commissioner Groh. So these are changes that we worked on together to make their compliance and our compliance easier to monitor, and also to expand the pool of people eligible for the program from those who are very, very, very poor to those who are just really poor from 100%. So I hope
nicely put.
I hope everyone thinks really poor people should be helped as well. So we are really proud of our 25-year partnership with the state on this program. And I thank you for your support and stand ready to answer any questions.
Representative Kosnick is first again.
Well, that's what coffee does to you. I'm ready to go. I just want to voice my support for this. Representative Claflin did a great job explaining the bill and ushering it through. So thank you to you. I had the opportunity to tour Twin City Rise. I know some other nonprofits are interested in this kind of model as well. So you're doing a fabulous job. It was really inspiring to tour your center.
Thank you.
North Minneapolis. And I think this is a great model for us as a jobs committee and the state going forward to kind of ensure that we're getting the highest return on our investment. And I just think it's a really good thing that we could be proud of supporting.
Thank you.
Representative Baker, I think you had a question.
Mr. Chair, yes, and maybe this is for the author as well. Some good things in this. Representative Claflin, I guess what I'm wondering about is the change in the language to change the wage to $10 per hour plus benefits, healthcare benefits. Can you give me more information about what does healthcare benefits mean? That could be a wide variety of things. So are you able to talk about that more specifically, Representative Claflin?
Representative Claflin.
Thank you, Chair. The bill is taking that language out, if I'm reading it correctly. And my apologies, my screen is small, and I'm trying to pull up the exact language. The old language had required that program participants make at least $10 per hour or $9 per hour and health benefits. But if I can find the screen that has the language on it, give me just one moment.
And thank you. And I think you're correct, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. And I think she's correct. It was getting removed, but I wanted to just put in some I don't have the actual bill in front of me either. I've got my summary notes, but I'm just kind of wondering, is it the intent then to always include healthcare benefits to anyone going through the program? Is it the focus of pay per hour to get that as strong as it can be? Can you maybe just give me your intention on that?
My intention on that?
The author, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Or Mr. Straits. I mean, he and Deed worked on this language and they brought that forth. So either one can answer that if they have the question.
Mr. Chair, and if I may, Representative Claflin, thank you. Working with Deed, what this is doing is removing the requirement that healthcare benefits be part of the placement, because we are having such a hard time verifying benefits through the Deed program through Workforce One. So it's really a compliance issue. At some point, we just were having a very difficult time. A lot of the part-time jobs aren't paying full-time benefits, Representative Baker, as you know. So it was really hard to define what that meant. And so we were operating in a gray area. And to Representative Claflin's point, one of the things we're trying to do working with Deed and Commissioner Grove is to get this program have more clarity so other nonprofits that are interested, and there are quite a few, can potentially operate and receive funding under this model in the future. I hope that answers your question.
Representative Baker. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that was good. Thank you.
And I will add, as Mr. Straits understands, this has never been my most favorite method of paying for workforce training, but after a couple years' effort, I'm starting to come around. And you guys can take that advice for what it's worth from a soon-to-be past chair. Are there any other questions on this particular bill? I see none. Will the clerk take the roll? Or wait, Representative Claflin, would you care to Any closing comments?
Thank you, Chair. I have high hopes for both of these programs that they are able to help Minnesotans get the job training they need. And I've been very pleased to see how Twin Cities Rise has helped get people into jobs that are still hiring during this crisis. And the Displaced Homemaker Program, soon to be renamed the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership, will also help get people into the workforce and get them the skills, the training, the support that they need to take on a new job. So I'm very hopeful that this will pass unanimously on the floor, but appreciate the support of this committee in helping getting people back to work. So thank you very much.
So Representative Claflin renews her motion.
Mr. Chair? House.
Yes?
We need to adopt the A1 amendment before we can move on the bill.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? We have the bill in the fashion that the author wants. Representative Claflin renews her motion for House File 4429 as amended to be passed and sent to the General Register. Will the clerk take the roll?
Representative Mahone.
Aye.
Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
Aye.
Representative Baker.
Baker votes aye.
Representative Claflin.
Aye.
Representative Gaffney.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
Aye.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Cosmic.
Cosmic, aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, we have 18 ayes.
Representative Claflin, you're on your way to the floor. Members, we have a presentation from the Minnesota Department of Economic Development on unemployment insurance. Now, everyone on the committee has had a constituent with an unemployment issue. I hope you are primed and ready for questions. We are going to go back to one question only per when I call on you, just in case everyone has a question, and so we can get through as many of them as possible, because I have a couple of questions myself, and as the chair, I get to have that prerogative to do two. So with that, I'd like to call down Katrina Gustav and Kevin McKinnon from the Department of Employment and Economic Development to give a brief presentation and then take questions. I better start my list.
Good morning, Chair Mahoney and members of the committee.
Good morning. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. My name is Katrina Golstead, and I'm the Director of Unemployment Insurance Legal Affairs and Appeals. and thank you for hearing us today. Last week, Commissioner Grove provided this committee an overview of the state's unemployment insurance program and provided updates on the UI program's progress in implementing the various provisions of the Federal CARES Act. I won't walk through the same information, but I did want to give a few updates on the UI program. The big news from the UI program is that we officially...
Could I stop you for a moment? Sure. I'm not sure if people are hearing you, so maybe you need to speak into the microphone a little bit closer.
Okay. Is that any better? Are you hearing me?
Well, it's better on my phone.
Are the other members hearing me all right? Yes, I'm seeing some yeses. Okay.
No objections.
All right. I apologize for that. I'm new to the Zoom meetings. I think my kindergartner is better at it than I at this point. As I was saying, the big news for this week is we have officially started implementing the pandemic unemployment assistance payments, which is part of the Federal CARES Act. Normally, those who are self-employed or independent contractors would not be eligible for unemployment benefits. These new PUA payments can cover those folks. And we're happy to say that we've started paying of roughly 40,000 Minnesotans on that program this week. That makes us likely the first state in the country to be able to implement all three parts of the CARES Act. I'll come back to PUA in a minute, but I did want to walk this committee through some of the other UI program updates first. As of the end of the day on Tuesday, the program has taken 2,320,772 benefit requests since the COVID-19 event started on March 15th. That surpasses the number of requests that we took in all of calendar year 2019. We also expect that by the end of this week, we'll have about 600,000 Minnesotans on active UI accounts. We started in March with roughly 60,000. And I wanted to quickly walk through the components of the Federal CARES Act to the members and explain how the department will implement them and is already beginning to implement them. As you may know, there is federal weekly compensation, the federal pandemic unemployment compensation. That's the extra $600 per week in addition to the individual's regular weekly benefit amount. And we started paying that out about 2 weeks ago. And again, we're the first state in the country to be able to do so. There's also extended unemployment insurance, which looks a lot like the EUC you saw in the days of the recession. That's an additional 13 weeks of benefits at whatever the weekly benefit was on the standard account. And then there's the pandemic unemployment assistance, or PUA, which we started rolling out this last week. So what is PUA? It provides weekly benefit payments just like regular unemployment insurance. It specifically provides benefits to people who would not be eligible for regular unemployment. The Federal Department of Labor called it the benefits of last resort. So if you don't qualify for a standard account or the 13-week extension or any extended benefits, then you may be eligible for this PUA benefit payment. That can include self-employed, independent contractors, workers who are in what are legally defined as non-covered employment, such as individuals who work for churches or church organizations, people who don't have sufficient work history to have earned the $3,000 in the base period necessary to get regular unemployment, and people who are living in a household where the head of household has passed away as a direct result of COVID-19. And we wanted to point out that this is a brand new program. It's not like anything we've ever administered before. And it was new as of when it was signed into law on March 27th. It includes a complex system of new eligibility considerations and factors that are not part of our regular UI system. And so we can't use the same technology or set of processes that we normally use for regular benefits. For example, in our regular system, we operate on a foundation of eligibility rules, income information that we don't have on hand for PUA. In order to help implement, we created a new partnership with the Department of Revenue to help expedite the certification of income and prevent fraud so that we can verify information. As of Friday, April 24th, we began the process of making payments to people who are eligible for PUA. And we've processed initial payments for more than 40,000 people already, and more will keep coming every day as we work through verifying information. Because of the complexity and the fact that it had to be created from the ground up in less than a month, it is going to take some time to get PUA benefits out to everyone who is eligible. But we have prioritized getting this done because we know that COVID-19 pandemic has created an unprecedented, unexpected challenges to people of the state. Our team's working literally around the clock. We've been working 13 plus hour days, 7 days a week to get this rolled out. And we're very proud to be, like I said, among the first in the nation to be able to implement all three parts of the CARES Act. We have provided almost daily updates on our website. So we encourage everyone to look at uimn.org. It includes information about what it takes to qualify for this various programs and how to apply. If your constituents have already applied for regular unemployment benefits, they will not need to reapply for the PUA. We will automatically establish a PUA account for them once we've determined that they're eligible. If your constituents that have not applied for unemployment benefits, there are special instructions for self-employed and independent contractors on our website at uimn.org. And if they did not follow those instructions, that's fine too. We will still be able to identify those individuals and determine their eligibility for PUA. But it's helpful if they can follow the instructions, it can expedite that process. If your constituents have not heard from us yet, please don't worry. We expect to be in touch with most people who are eligible, many by the end of this week, which would be today. They will hear information by email and mail and through their online account on their eligibility for PUA. Applicants who receive PUA benefits will also get the additional $600 a week that runs through July 25th. If they continue to meet eligibility requirements under the law. And they're backdated to whenever they first became unable to work due to COVID-19. As a quick process overview of how we're handling what's happening right now, and we wanted to point out, we are certainly aware that there's a lot of frustration that it's difficult to reach us through our call center during these times. Oh, we're having to make some really difficult choices between answering customer service calls and processing the cases so that we can pay applicants. We can see that many people are calling the customer service line multiple times a day in order to talk to someone. We did want to point out it's first come, first serve, and the call center staff answer calls in the order they're received. So if you hang up, you have to start all over again, waiting in line. So we're trying to get that messaging out. The government relations team has reached out to the constituent services staff earlier this week with an improved process to help you identify cases that need to be escalated and route them to the government relations and UI teams so that those cases can be more easily addressed and tracked. And I've been currently acting as the point person for any legal issues. I've been regularly helping with legal aid clients where they might have identified that their client's not able to receive unemployment benefits. And our team's happy to investigate concerns about specific accounts and assist advocates or members of the legislature, that is, who have constituents who are in this situation. We're certainly happy to help as we can. Speaking as a member of the UI team, the staff is working around the clock to get these benefits to deserving Minnesotans. As Commissioner Grove walked the committee through last week, we've been adding staff, server capacity, and customer service hours to try to meet the unprecedented demand for the UI program. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. Obviously, I can't talk to specific cases, but I would be happy to answer questions for the committee. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Did Deputy Commissioner McKinnon want to stick around for questions that you might not be able to answer? We only have about 25 to 30 minutes, and I have six legislators, seven if we include me. And first on the list, I'm going to read the whole list here. Representative Cagle, Representative Knorr, Robbins, Haley, Kosnick, and Baker are in the queue. So, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I guess my question was a little bit about the wait times. What the wait times have come down to as far as being able to answer questions. I know Representative Robbins has a constituent who happens to be my brother who has been having some problems getting, he qualified for you, sorry. he qualified for UI, got his, he worked at a restaurant, got his first payment, and then hasn't gotten one since. And trying to get a hold of somebody at UI to figure out why he hasn't gotten his second, third, and fourth, and fifth UI payments has been pretty much impossible. And so want to know, you know, what kind of errors are happening in the system, and then how people can actually get a hold of somebody, what those wait times have come down to, and how you guys are actively trying to get those wait times down.
Sure. Ms. Goldstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As to the wait times, yes, we're sorry. We're aware there are long wait times that frankly break our hearts as a group, because we pride ourselves in providing excellent customer service. They have ebbed and flowed. We have added different hours. We've taken different measures like hiring, adding additional staff, scheduling certain days to handle password calls versus general information calls. With regard to errors in the system, there haven't been errors. As I said, with standard unemployment, it is an eligibility-based program. And so our system is designed to identify what might prevent someone from meeting the eligibility requirements under the law. More often than not, if someone has had a pause in payment, it's been because of an eligibility issue on the account that an individual who works for the department has to look at and adjudicate. A lot of people are new. I think something like 80% of the individuals who've come through have never had an unemployment account. So we're working on education. We put a link on our website of about a 30-minute video that walks step-by-step how to apply for unemployment benefits that we've gotten really positive feedback on to try to prevent any errors that might raise an unneeded issue in our system that requires a human being to look at and adjudicate to then release payment. Like I said, we're happy to have any issues like what you mentioned with your brother raised through our government affairs team, and we'd be happy to take a look at it, see what we can do to investigate what's holding payment.
Thank you. I'm going to go through the list here, and then if people have a second question, they certainly can get back on the list. Representative Knorr.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I may have second and third questions, but I just wanted to start with one that I've been hearing from the nonprofit, the tribal, Indian tribal, and also this may impact governmental entities. It's the reimbursing accounts. Just wanted to know how many reimbursing accounts employers do we have in the state? What is their total UI bills? Do we have a plan to support them so that we can make them whole? CARES Act only pays for 50% for the expenses that they've already incurred. Some of them are unable to do that. So do we have a plan as a state to support the nonprofit, the Indian tribal entities who are seeking help through the reimbursing account?
Ms. Goldstein.
Thank you, Representative Neuer. I don't have the answer to you of the number of reimbursing employers in the state. If you need that information, I could work with our team to get back to you on that. As to reaching out, I can tell you that I've participated in multiple meetings with the tribes through the government's office and help as to best of my ability to answer some of their questions and concerns. Our statute already provides relief of charges for reimbursing employers if the federal government is reimbursing the trust fund for benefits paid. So most of these benefits paid through the CARES Act are already reimbursed by the federal government. The additional 13 weeks is reimbursed by the federal government. The PUA is reimbursed by the federal government, and 50% of benefits paid on a standard account will be reimbursed through the CARES Act. We're currently working on what that would mean to administer that portion of it. That has been explained as best we can to the tribes and other government entities and nonprofits who have raised those concerns. And I'm sorry, I think I fully answered the question. Let me know if you had any follow-up questions on that. Thank you.
Mr. Chase, the question is, if a nonprofit entity is unable to pay their 50%, they're not going to be collecting any resources. They have to pay upfront in order for them to get the help. And how do we make them whole by paying the missing 50%, if that's feasible?
Representative Noir, yes, we'll certainly work with employers, as most of the bills won't come through until August. And we've already expressed, and I believe sent correspondence indicating that we'll work with entities who have concerns about this and considering waiving any late fees or penalties or interest as we're able, as we work through this situation together.
Thank you. Yes, that's kind of the law that they have to, and we would have to change the law in order to do that. And I don't know, the details are too great to actually go into with this short of time left. Now, that may be something that would have to be repaid next year or dealt with in next session under that biennium, because you'll have the time to, we'll have the time to actually look at it. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Gilstad, for you and all your team at UI. You're doing incredible work, and we are all very grateful. I think my question might actually be more for Mr. McKinnon, but I'm not sure. I've had several employers contact me who have received the PPP loans, and they are worried how that's going to impact them when they call back workers who have been furloughed. Will it still be forgivable as they're bringing people back on board? I've just had, yesterday I had 5 calls on this. People are very confused. There's some sort of an 8-week window in which they have to keep people on, and they don't know when that starts. Is it from the time they get the PPP loan or the time they start bringing people back on? So I reached out to the SBA. Of course, I didn't get anywhere. So if there's just any guidance you guys can get for our businesses on how the bringing people back on will be impacting the forgivable part of the loan, that would be very helpful.
Mr. McKinnon, can you answer that question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, as you indicated, if the loan is used for payroll, 75% of the loan is used for payroll and other expenses, yes, it will be forgiven. To your question about the date that it starts, I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm not exactly sure, and I can certainly ask the SBA, or we can post some of that information also on our website. But generally, as the business, once they receive the loan, they start paying their employees over the next 8 weeks. Yes, that is forgivable. So as soon as those folks start coming back and 75% of those proceeds are used for that purpose, that's what triggers the forgivability.
And Mr. McKinnon, can you put something on paper and pass that along to my CA, and he'll get that out to our members?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mrs. Gilstad and Commissioner McKinnon. I also want to echo thanks and gratitude for everything that the teams are doing. It's phenomenal, and we want you to know that we appreciate it. My question was also related to the reimbursable employer accounts. So I know we don't want to go into that again, but just want to go on record that it's still not clear to me what our state guidance is on that. So if that can be done either through email correspondence, Mr. Chair, back to the committee or at another hearing, I think it's still an area where we have a lot of questions. So I will move to my second question. I'd like some understanding on where our overall exposure is in our unemployment insurance account. I know that it gets backfilled eventually by the feds, but then what is our, just where are we at now with the solvency in the account? And, you know, what happens after this in us rebuilding the account? My understanding is we promised employers that during this pandemic that their unemployment insurance rates would not increase because of this. So if we can just have a short discussion on kind of the financial picture, big picture, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Which one of you would care to take that question? Mr. McKinnon? Ms. Goldstein.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand. I'm sorry. Can the group hear me? My screen paused there.
I can hear you.
Okay. Thank you. It's an understandable question, Mr. Chair. We don't, you know, have all the answers right now as to solvency of the trust fund. As I said, under the CARES Act, all of the PUA 13 additional weeks, the extra $600 are reimbursed by the federal government. So that is not money that's taking a hit on our trust fund. I don't have the information I would need at this time to provide a sound answer on what the numbers look like in the trust fund. But I can tell you that the additional benefits that are being paid out through the Federal CARES Act are reimbursed by the federal government to our trust fund.
I think you're going to have to catch up with Representative Haley or the committee and put something on paper so that we can pass out to the committee, because that is an issue and people don't understand how Minnesota does its unemployment. There's few people. It's a complicated financial system. But the federal printing presses are going overtime right now, so we will not run out of money. Our uninsurance will continue to issue checks, and they will be good checks, and they're backed by the federal government as they loan us $500 million or $1 billion at a time. Representative Haley, I hope you can catch up with the witness and get a clearer answer for yourself. I know the finances are an issue for you. Representative Posnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly recognize the magnitude of the workload that has come upon DEED. And I've got a couple specific constituents. One in particular I've been working with for about 4 weeks now. Is there, how can we get better customer service to this guy specifically? But, I know we're doing our best, but, it's embarrassing for me as a representative, and he is frustrated beyond all get out. He appreciates my efforts, but certainly 4 weeks, and he's got some slightly unusual circumstances, but trying to go online, waiting on the phones, can somebody give me a phone call, a phone number that I can have somebody hold his hand and get this resolved specifically?
Well, I think I'm going to answer that because earlier in the testimony, they indicated that the government relations people were working on that particular piece. So I think you need to touch base with the DEED's government relations person. And if you don't have her number, call me. You've got mine, I know.
No, I appreciate the efforts. If you're Ms. Dannon, I've engaged her a little bit. It's difficult for her to get down in the specific services of
of a specific case. So she's been great, but I think it might be helpful to us as legislators and to our constituents, perhaps, if we could have a customer service dedicated person that would handle some of our specific cases that we might be able to expedite. But for my particular person that's been just trying to get, paying into the system forever for 65 years and trying to get a couple weeks of benefits in this time, it shouldn't be that difficult for him to try to get his answers, his questions answered. So if there's another number, I will follow up with both the testifiers because, like I said, this is embarrassing that it takes this over 4 weeks in such a trying time. But I do not minimize the effort that's put on your shoulders either. But trust me, I've worked with this gentleman and it's just too frustrating. So we can move on, but if either of the testifiers want to reach out to me with a phone number that I can have somebody call this gentleman, that would be great.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, good work, UI folks. A lot of pressure coming at you. One of the things that I'm concerned about is hearing yesterday some of our employers are actually starting to call people back to work. People are not wanting to come back to work because of the obvious $600 bonus really is what it's getting down to. And I know the employers can, force them and cut them off and then they will lose those unemployment benefits if they want to pursue that. My question is, how do we, and maybe we don't have the answer for this, maybe this is to Mr. McKenna, how are we as a state going to be able to deal with this? Because if people refuse to come back sooner than they're asked to, even though we're going to get reimbursed federally from that extra $600, we're still on the hook for that other 50%. That would normally have been on unemployment. Is that correct? Is this hurting our fund in Minnesota by allowing folks to stay home longer than they really should? How do we deal with that? Are we going to get 100% reimbursement?
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, I'm not exactly sure on the reimbursement. That's a question for Katrina, but as it relates to calling people back to work, and I think you indicated this accurately, if employers are calling people back to work, unless they have a reason, a COVID-related reason, they have to go back to work. They are not eligible for unemployment insurance benefits.
Ms. Goldstock?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. Our statute provides that if you've refused a suitable offer of employment, you're ineligible for benefits for 8 weeks. And so if someone is offered suitable work and refuses that, that impacts that person's eligibility for the standard unemployment benefits as well as the additional $600.
Okay. Thank you.
We have about 8 minutes left. We have four questions. We're going to go about 5 to 10 minutes long, just to give people a heads up. Representative Zong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is to the UI testifier. I appreciate the work that you and your department's doing. However, I have some very big concerns over the message that if Minnesotans are having an issue and they can't get their cases to you guys, that they will have to contact us lawmakers to expedite their cases to you, I think sends a wrong message. I have constituents who have been calling me, contacting me, waiting for, who have said they have waited hours, they have sent in emails to no responses from your department. And I'm concerned about, what about those who do not know that they have to contact us to get their cases expedited? What is it that your department, you've mentioned that you have hired on more staff But what is it that you need more to be more efficient, to be operating so that I'm not getting my constituents who are contacting me concerned about our State Department not being able to do their jobs, waiting a whole month or more just to get an answer. I have forwarded many of my constituents' concerns to your government affairs staff, who I have not even heard back.
Who would like to take that one?
Mr. Chair, I'll take that. Thank you, Representative Zhang. I'd wanted to reiterate that we went from about 60,000 to 600,000 accounts. One thing that's important to explain is that unemployment insurance programs are funded based on a fiscal year claims coming in. So that means we had funding and staff before this started based on 60,000 claims, and now are handling more than three times what we handled at the height of the Great Recession. And so while we greatly feel ourselves and appreciate those concerns, expediting through a representative is not the only way to reach out to us. We do have an amazing call center team who have been working around the clock since this started. They're coming into the office on the phones, you know, 8+ hours a day. And I hear a lot of those calls, and I'm very proud of that team. They do great work, and they care very much about public service and the people that they're helping. Like I said at the beginning, we have found that a lot of people are, we can see through our call tracking system, a lot of people are getting frustrated and hanging up. And unfortunately, that makes you start all over the process of waiting in line. It's really helpful to understand you need to, you know, do the best you can to wait and not hang up. If you hang up, you have to start that process all over again to get through to an individual. We are handling concerns as efficiently as possible when they get routed from various sources to us. And we have been paying those who are eligible at the federal standards, which I think in these unprecedented times is something for our team to celebrate. Like I said, we are the first in the nation to actually be able to process and pay claims on all the various parts of the CARES Act. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that still doesn't answer my concerns.
Yes, I understand. I think, I don't know how to answer that one, Representative Zhang. I think you're going to have to, we're going to have to get you sitting down with somebody from unemployment to actually spend some time with you going through some of that. But I will tell you that our system in Minnesota is, again, and I've said it before, better than, there's only a couple that are better than our system here in Minnesota. Our neighbor to the east is having problems. They had to hire a private contractor, and they're unlikely to get that contractor on board to answer questions till the middle of May. It's very frustrating. This is not my first show with this. I will do whatever I can to get you in contact with one of the UI folks that can answer your questions and give you a better answer. I have been pushing them hard to get their call centers up and running. I went through this more than a few years back when we really didn't have a good system. I know, didn't answer your question. It's going to be tough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I just wanted to note for the record that some of the contacts that you have forwarded to me, who I have reached out to, have yet still responded to me.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go to Representative Hassan, and I may be off for a minute here while my battery is down. We'll see if I can get on. So, Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, the unemployment folks. I know that we're in a very difficult time, and your world, you know, has changed from, like you said, 6,000 accounts to 600,000 accounts. But I'm going to echo on some of the frustrations some members have shared already. We are getting calls and emails from our constituents that they can't get through the phone and they can't get through an email. And one of the other things that I've heard from some of my constituents is that, especially with the folks who speak second language, that they will hold the phone for hours and hours and then get disconnected and then they have to start the process all over again. Can somebody walk me through what is the best way for folks to contact you guys? If holding the phone for hours and hours and hanging up is, that's frustration for somebody who has lost their job, who is unsure where their paycheck's coming from, who also doesn't speak English, doesn't understand some of the systems that we're operating in. Are there different routes for people to connect with somebody other than holding the phone for hours and hours and getting hang up and then starting that process all over again? Or is there an email that people respond to better that we can give our constituencies so they can email somebody? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hazan. Again, we are aware and apologize for the frustrations of those who have had difficulty getting through to us. For those who have tried calling and have not been able to get through, again, we encourage those individuals who've reached out to all of you to work through our government affairs office. As those accounts get routed to our staff, we do work through them and have the ability to see what it might be that's holding up payment. We do want to point out where we have been able to pay about 90% of those or more who are eligible. And with the volume of people that we're trying to serve right now, you know, we're now doing our best to then work through the remaining 10%. And those are likely those that you're hearing from who we understand are frustrated. And we will continue to do our best to help and serve those people to the best of our abilities.
I have a question that I'm going to add to this. Do you have folks that can work with people that don't speak English as a first language?
We use a service through our phone lines that allows us to have on-demand translation services. So yes.
And how many languages do you translate? Because my school district has something like 120 different languages.
I think it's over 200.
Thank you. And again, to all the representatives, if you need to really work either through me or through the government relations people, Ms. Dannon, to get some answers to this and remind them that we hold the funding in our committee. And whatever threat you need to do to help your constituents, because you work for the people who elected you to be members here. I have a question, and then we are in negotiations on our, Representative Stevenson is asked to address the committee, and then we're going to be done. My questions are, I'm concerned. I have heard a number of people getting denied because their employer never paid into the insurance trust fund, didn't pay their premiums. They were sucking off of the other taxpayers. They didn't get the Minnesota unemployment. They got the PIA or whatever it is and all the other acronyms. So is the department tracking some of these? How are you keeping track of that so that we can go back and attempt to get this money these employers have essentially, cheated the taxpayers or the good employers, because there's the vast majority are really good employers and they pay the benefit to the state. How are you tracking those folks?
Mr. Chair, I'll take this question. Maybe need to give a little bit of background. If you are a registered employer in the state of Minnesota, you are required to register and to pay unemployment insurance taxes. It is an employer tax. that funds the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. A lot of individuals get that confused. They think it's a payroll tax. So we often hear people concerned that they've paid into the trust fund for years. It's the employer tax that funds the trust fund. And so our system is aware of all registered employers. They are billed for their taxes. If they have not paid their taxes, that has zero impact on an individual's eligibility to receive unemployment in Minnesota. Sometimes employers have misreported the earnings to another state if business is done in multiple states. And yes, we have a way to track that and correct that. And if that happens, we request the wages from the other state and we add it onto our account and ensure that those taxes are accountable for and paid to Minnesota. So I'm not aware of a situation in which an employer failing to pay their tax bill, it's impossible for that to have an impact on an individual's eligibility for unemployment here in Minnesota. You should apply for unemployment in the state in which you last did work. Sometimes it gets confusing for those who do work if they live near the border or work in multiple states.
Well, I have further questions, but I'm going to call on Representative Stevenson after I tell you that I will be on the phone. I think I have about a half an hour yet today. I hope I don't get caught in a holding pattern a little later today. But Representative Stevenson, and then we're going to end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to take a moment because our committee is, as I understand it, this is our potentially our last jobs committee hearing of the biennium. And I think, as most members are aware, both our chair and our Republican lead are not going to be returning next year. And I just wanted to stop and recognize both you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gunther, and thank you for your service to Minnesota and your service on this committee. I just was trying to think you'd be really something if you could quantify all of the great things that you two have been able to do for the state of Minnesota through this committee and your work together over your many years of partnership. We were really lucky to have both of you, and you will both be missed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Representative Stevenson. It's been a pleasure and an honor to serve on this committee for 22 years, and it's been a pleasure to serve with Bob. We've had our fights, we've had our alliances, and there'll be some good memories with that. Representative Gunther, do you want to compliment me?
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. We used to have more fights than we do now. I've often said if you take Representative Mahoney and myself together, we probably make the best jobs chairman in the world. I think it's a pleasure serving with you, Tim. You are a good friend, and I hope you're going to be well.
Well, I hope that all the members on the committee are finding excitement in this particular committee. It's a broad breadth committee, and it has a lot of responsibility. So thank you, all of you, for serving. I hope you all come back to this particular committee and use the expertise you've gotten this last 2 years, this biennium. So with that, unless there's any other compliments you want to pay to Bob or to myself, we're going to adjourn. Really?
Bob. No.
Representative Kosnick, thank you. I see. Are you clapping?
I was clapping. I was just saying thank you to both of you without trying to interrupt the committee and spill my coffee.
Wow.
Thanks so much to both of you. We've learned so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and Lead Gunther. So thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, you are my House neighbor in the Senate district, so I just wanted to thank you for want to express how much I have admired your leadership and appreciated your mentorship. Most of all, it's been an honor to call you a friend, house boss, and old colleague. For your many years of service, as you head off into the sunset to spend more time with your wonderful family, It's been inspiring to young folks like me here on the East Side. Your time as chair of many committees over the years has helped us steward great wins for Minnesotans across all aspects of our lives, from wage theft protections to your championing for higher education, Metro State University. So I really just want to say thank you for your 22 years of productive public service for the greater East Side and for our state.
Thank you. Thank you. With that, thank you all. Thank you all for your service. The committee looks like most of its work is done. We may have another meeting. Who knows at this kind of session, but today we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.